feel they need to prove themselves before they earn their seat at the board table. They are often reluctant to establish their leadership role with the board early enough. Here's the paradox. The more power you claim, within reason and in the right way, the more power you will earn. Board members are first to point out that a CEO who is looking for the board to set direction is not fully doing the job he's been hired for. Take the experience of one first-time CEO we coached, Mark. Mark was the head of a mid-sized consumer products business. Mark didn't inherit a functioning board as much as a firing squad of 17 with no commander. The prior CEO had been fired, and only a slim majority of board members had backed Mark's promotion to CEO. The board chairman supported Mark, but was on his way out, and his political capital had been depleted. Three board members were actively lobbying for the chairman role. One of them, Oliver, was a meddling micromanager, determined to undermine Mark. Several capable board members were disengaged, and some were looking to resign, unable to contribute amid so much dysfunction. More than anything, Mark wanted to focus on the business. He needed board support for a major acquisition and had a complex IT decision to consider. With the board in disarray, decisions weren't moving forward. He anxiously lamented the hand he was dealt, but knew he couldn't ignore it. If Oliver won the chairman title, Mark was prepared to quit. Mark turned to us in angst and exasperation. He initially thought that as a newly appointed CEO, his role was to patiently let the board sort itself out. Mark loathed to be seen as overreaching, but he was emphatic that the company needed a well-functioning board to succeed. After we carefully analyzed the situation, it was increasingly clear that the board wouldn't get there on their own. We helped Mark understand the power dynamics on the board, find his voice, and gradually guide the board to a successful outcome for the business. Getting the right chairperson in place and neutralizing Oliver was Mark's first concern. We examined the sources of Oliver's power on the board. First, Oliver had what you might call bullhorn power. Without a strong chairman or lead director, a mediocre board member can capture undue influence by forcefully asserting himself in meetings. Share of voice often translates into real power and influence. Second, Oliver had busybody power. He inserted himself in managing key initiatives, convening meetings, and minding the administrative details. He was at the center of every conversation, giving him ample opportunity to build relationships and lobby behind the scenes. Oliver had a lot of informal power and was on a mission to become the chairman. Mark was up against a big challenge. Fortunately, Mark was one of the most gifted CEOs we've met when it comes to engaging for impact. Rather than confront Oliver directly, we advised Mark to focus his energies on building relationships with capable board members who'd been previously disengaged. Mark enlisted each of them in a business initiative that fit their skills and interests. He made their roles clear and visibly appreciated their contributions. The mood on the board started to shift. With board agenda refocused from squabbling to business priorities, Oliver's voice was muted by the more capable contributors empowered by Mark. Not one to give up, the less relevance Oliver had in business conversations, the more vehemently he politicked behind the scenes. When the time came to select the new chair, Mark worked hand in hand with the outgoing chairman and head of the governance committee to put in place an objective and transparent process with clear selection criteria. Oliver didn't even make the list of finalists. His ego-driven gamesmanship was so extreme, other board members reached their own conclusions. He had self-destructed. As we wrote this chapter, Oliver was retiring from the board. Mark never imagined that his first task as a CEO would be to help restructure the board. Had the situation not been so dire and so risky for the company, he might have shied away from asserting that much leadership with the board in his first year. He learned a valuable lesson. The CEO may not have the formal authority to lead the board, but he has the responsibility to put the company on a path to success, even if that means taking risks with the board. No matter whether your board functions as a well-oiled machine or suffers from a Game of Thrones level of intrigue, your job is to understand what you walked into and how to engage with the board to make the business successful. The board dynamic is far more complex than that of a simple collection of individuals, and it needs to be understood. To start with, find out how the board has functioned in the past. How often did they meet? How often did they interface with the previous CEO and other management team members? What level of detail did they involve themselves in? Were there other means by which information flowed outside of formal meetings? How were decisions made? How did the board tackle the last crisis? As you become acquainted with your board, be on the lookout for these common archetypes among board members. The engaged partner. This is the board member you want. The CEOs we interviewed told us that 63% of their board members are engaged partners. This board member has good judgment, invests the time to understand your business, and provides candid, thoughtful perspectives and pushback that help you and the business succeed. He understands that his role is to provide advice and accountability, not to manage the business. Proactively look to develop and add engaged partners so that they comprise at least 3/4 of your board. Lean on them to help push your thinking and help you be the best CEO you can be. The quiet expert. This board member has good ideas and relevant experience, but won't weigh in on board debates unless you specifically ask her to. She's unlikely to take risks or stick her neck out to support you. Typically, the quiet expert has more competence than influence. Create structured opportunities for the quiet expert to add value. For example, if she is an M&A expert and you are looking to raise your game in M&A, ask her to meet with your team to share best practices and to help you get an independent point of view on your team and approach in this area. Proactively ask for her perspective in board discussions within her area of expertise. The rubber stamper. This is a board member who follows the lead of the CEO and the most powerful board members. His primary goal is to establish an agreeable reputation that gets him hired to other boards. When conflicts and challenges arise, seemingly innocuous rubber stampers can become liabilities, because their primary instinct is self-protection. They are, therefore, not reliable allies. Ignore a rubber stamper at your peril. From early on, understand whom they hold in high regard. As big decisions come up, rubber stampers will be looking for indications of where you and other influential board members are leaning. The micromanager. This board member is eager to prove his value and, at times, superiority. His actions can undermine the CEO and be disruptive to board dynamics. If a micromanager is well-intentioned and competent but misguided about his role, actively enlist him in activities that are helpful to the company and to you. Set clear parameters and give him candid feedback on what is and isn't helpful to you and the company. If he is disruptive, engage your chairperson or lead director to help coach him. If all else fails, work with the governance committee to remove him from the board. The CEO in waiting. This is the person who wants your job. You'll often find one or even more board members who would like to run the company. Sometimes that person is actually brought on board as a contingency plan. Other times she has unfinished business in her own career and is eager to prove she could do the job better whether or not she'll ever get a shot. When you are offered a CEO job, ask who else wanted the job and how prepared is the chair/lead director to address any issues should that board member be disruptive. As hard as it is, approach those board members initially with an open mind. Understand their contribution, power on the board, and motivations. If they bring value, find a way to work with them. If they are disruptive and seek to undermine you, work with the chair/lead director to move them out when possible. The activist. This is someone who is put on the board by a hedge fund or private equity firm to drive a specific agenda, or is an activist investor himself. Don't try to win over activists with your relationship skills. Their primary allegiance is to the hedge fund, not you. Instead, understand the agenda they represent and look for common ground. Now, with the scan of surroundings completed, you are ready to move from learning what you have walked into to building an effective partnership with the board. The best questions no one asks their board members. CEOs in their first 2 years feel especially vulnerable and eager to prove themselves. As a result, they often take a report-out posture with the board. Dutifully reporting results, summarizing actions completed and milestones met, and pedantically following up on board member suggestions. The very same CEOs who can effortlessly charm a customer and have built enviable relationships with their previous bosses seem to lose their mojo when dealing with the all-powerful board. Recall the lessons from Chapter 3, Engage for Impact, and Chapter 8, Close the Deal. They can be simply summarized as, if you want to win people over, first understand who they are and what they care about. Sound simple enough? Yet it is too often forgotten in the anxiety-ridden first 2 years at the top. Kim was recently called to Chicago to coach a CEO of a $75 million private equity-backed retailer whose lead director's frustration was moving toward detonation. When she arrived, the CEO's attitude was combative. As he saw it, he was hamstrung by a board of finance types who had no respect for the level of experimentation needed to achieve the desired growth. Kim listened to him for an hour while asking some basic questions about his plans for the business, his expectations for organic growth, and the like. He finished with an exasperated request. Just tell me what to do to get this board off my back. So Kim asked a new question. Have you ever tried to put yourself in the lead director's head? Do you know how his broader portfolio is doing and how this business fits in? No, he admitted. Then let me tell you about your lead director. He's young, just like you. This is one of his very first big investments. He's proving himself, just like you. He has to work hard to get his investors to trust him with their capital. That's how he invests in companies like yours. His partners want to see him driving this company and you to results. They want to know you're not making haphazard bets. Numbers are his one and only opportunity to show that. Meanwhile, in an hour of talking about the business with me, you haven't used a single number. You want him to be comfortable with risky moves? Then talk to him in a way that shows you appreciate where he's coming from. You've got to speak spreadsheet to him, or you're never going to earn the trust you need to be bold. Succeeding with your board, or with anyone else for that matter, starts with understanding how their performance is measured and motivated. With that grounding, you also need to go beyond the numbers. Get to know your board members one-on-one and understand their context and their pressures, dreams, and fears. So often in problematic CEO board relationships, the fundamental problem is a lack of shared context. Here you are playing the highest stakes game of your career with a room full of people you barely know. They feel the exact same way about you. You need them to trust you. Trust is built on alignment of interest, credibility, and familiarity. Underinvest in any of these three ingredients, and the breaches in the relationship are sure to show up at a time when you need board support the most. Susan Cameron, the former CEO and current board chair of Reynolds American Incorporated, RAI, led the tobacco giant with a board of accomplished leaders. Former House Speaker John Boehner, former Univar CEO John Zillmer, and Jerome Abelman, the general counsel for British American Tobacco, which during Susan's tenure owned 42% of RAI, to name a few heavyweights. Susan describes having had supportive, productive relationships with them all, but not by accident. She invested in a one-on-one relationship with each member. Aside from regular conversations, she visited each of them in person every other year. "I made an explicit gesture to go to them," she says. "Doing it on their turf, they're more comfortable," she says. "It shows you value them." From Susan's point of view, every new CEO needs to set aside time to communicate directly with her board members as individuals. So they get to know you and they understand your priorities and character. If nothing else, reaching out and discussing things with them will give them a level of comfort and they will support you. In other words, adding familiarity to the relationship can cement support, which could be the difference between whether they back or balk at your next strategic initiative. Think of these meetings as your chance at last to interview them, albeit in a comfortable context that demonstrates respect. Your goal is to build a relationship and to establish the foundation for alignment and trust with the board. Here are some of the questions to ask your board members one-on-one within 6 months of your hiring. What excites you the most about being on this board? With these questions, you're looking for clues to their primary motivations. Relevance, status, stimulation, compensation? Most board members genuinely want to add value, but understanding why can help you engage them more deeply. How did you get connected with this board? The answer may lend insight about whether they're likely to have an independent point of view or be beholden to a founder or investor. Whom on the board do you talk with most often? This seemingly innocent question is a giant tell, often answering a key question: who's influencing whom? This question will help you understand the behind-the-scenes coalitions so that you can manage them and bring back-channel conversations into the light. Where have you focused your time and efforts in the past? This question will help you understand the person's competencies and also shed light on how and how well the board has functioned prior to your arrival. Where and how would you like to engage in the future? This is an opportunity to proactively engage board members on issues where they feel they can add value. It will ease their doubts about how to participate and be useful, and also give you a clearer picture of how much of their time and attention you're likely to get. What does success look like for the company and for me as CEO in 1 year, in 3 years? This is the start of many conversations you'll have around expectations and strategy. Invest in these relationships appropriately, and you should never have an iota of doubt about where you stand with your board. Regular one-on-ones are your chance to connect the dots, as Susan Cameron puts it, and make sure everyone's belted in and along for the ride. From lunch function to functional. As you have heard, the initial investment into understanding board members plants very important seeds for a strong partnership. To bear fruit, these seeds must be continually watered and fertilized through deliberate, ongoing engagement and communication. Kevin Cox of American Express likes to show CEOs what he calls the CEO ecosystem chart. At the center of the chart is the board. Surrounding the board are spokes going to and from team, culture, marketplace, personal brand, strategy. The first CEO he showed it to immediately balked. The board shouldn't be at the center, that's giving it too much prominence. But that's exactly where it belongs, Cox told him. If I were to animate this, you would draw lines going back and forth. You are constantly pinging the board, for example, on strategy. Develop the strategy, go back and triangulate it with the board. Take their feedback, adapt it. Reid Foss, the CEO of National Vision, serves on 9 boards. Reid believes it is the CEO's job to ensure that his board sleeps better at night. As tight as you may be with your board, as earnest as you are about the spirit of partnership, there is still a need for influence and persuasion. There should be a robust flow of information to ensure there are no surprises in board meetings. Each director should have a preview and a chance to voice concerns, giving you time to prepare your thoughts and anticipate questions and debate. A lack of information creates a vacuum that board members will fill, says Reid. In silence, people will assume the worst. Then, when problems arise, the board rushes in to manage things without giving you time to solve them. You have to remember that you are living and breathing the business. Any given decision you make is the result of hundreds of data points that all add up to what, in that context, seems obvious to you. In contrast, your board member who is not as deeply involved in the business sees a blank space between the problem and your proposed solution. It's on you to communicate with enough frequency and depth to fill that space. Here is a short list of practices that have helped CEOs build effective partnerships with boards. Align on what success looks like. It sounds obvious, but often we see CEOs trip up over this because they avoid the tough conversations that emerge once you dig into details. Failure could be fatal. One study of 246 board members found that alignment of the board and CEO on strategy and goals was the most important determinant of success or failure of the CEO. Jason Blessing, the CEO of Plex Systems, told us about his challenges with board members and financial sponsors over how to measure performance early on. The cure, he's found, is to be as specific as possible as soon as possible. He learned this the hard way as the CEO of a growing software-as-a-service business. Everyone agreed that customer retention was an incredibly important metric. But over the course of several board meetings, it became clear that the way he and the board were measuring and interpreting the results of their retention metric were quite different, causing unnecessary friction. To move forward, Blessing met one-on-one with each board member and the CFO, getting everyone on the same page about how they'd measure retention going forward and what was the range of acceptable outcomes. Looking back, Blessing only wished he had pushed the issue much sooner, at the very first moment he saw that there might be a discrepancy in thinking. Align on the rules of engagement early. Be upfront and explicit in creating clarity around roles, yours and theirs. Reid Foss shared his list of the 6 responsibilities of a good board. They are to 1. Hire and fire the CEO and hold her accountable. 2. Agree on strategic vision and plans. 3. Agree to an annual budget. 4. Advise on any substantive risks. 5. Approve the annual audit. 6. Don't get in the way. That's it. Everything else is at the discretion of the CEO to involve the board. But it's up to you to make that clear, particularly if you're dealing with an inexperienced board. Find out up front if they have special concerns. What can't the board be surprised by? What decisions at what level would they prefer to be involved in? Assign homework. The best way to productively engage directors and bring the best of their expertise to the business is by setting clear and real priorities for each board member. You already have committee charters, but does each of your board members know what, specifically, you are counting on her or him for? Elena once counseled the CEO who had a potentially valuable board member who was ready to resign. "Give him something meaningful to do," she told her client. "Something he will enjoy and that will add real value." The CEO thought Elena was way off base because this board member's stated reason for leaving was not having the time to contribute. But the CEO agreed to try it, asking him to lead a board task force on a major acquisition, his area of expertise. Sure enough, the board member walked out of the room re-energized and excited to contribute. "He told me he'd never been more excited about this board," the CEO said. Partner with your chairperson or lead director. Some CEOs make the mistake of thinking that a weak board chair or lead director will give them more power, but the opposite is true. It takes a strong, credible leader with time and discipline to corral a group of peers, all of whom should be coming to the table with distinct points of view. If you align with your chairperson, she'll be your best partner for harnessing different viewpoints to push the business forward, not disintegrate into unproductive conflict. Bring in fresh talent. The board that hired you may or may not be the right board to support you as CEO. Whether the business has scaled from $35 million to $500 million, or whether your agenda is a significantly different one from that of the previous regime, the board is unlikely to be the same one you will need going forward. Board development is a very delicate dance and can backfire easily if not well handled. Ideally, company bylaws and power dynamics on the board allow you to bring on board a couple of trusted and competent people in the first couple of years. When Vicky Ascara was the CEO of Feeding America, she proactively rebuilt her board. She started the conversations with her chair, David Taylor, the current CEO of P&G, about the composition of the board during her very first week. Call out unproductive behavior. Jack Kroll, the former chairman and CEO of DuPont, told us that he found that board meetings tended to be dominated by two or three voices. The other members were silent because they were either not paying attention or unsure of what they had to contribute. Jack adopted the practice of calling on each member individually. That kept everyone thinking actively. By doing this, he found out that the silent folks were often the source of great ideas. Take a shareholder's perspective. An investor recently shared that the company had fired a CEO because he was acting like an advocate for employees instead of a shareholder for the business. Ultimately, a CEO's job is to create value for shareholders. A CEO is uniquely at the pinch point among many constituencies with often divergent interests. You may need to talk the board down from unrealistic expectations while pushing the team up to reach higher levels of performance. To deliver, a CEO must think and act like an owner. How to deliver bad news. Even the highest achieving CEOs can stumble at the moment when they're most vulnerable, when they need to deliver bad news. Faced with a painful setback, they suddenly resemble John Wayne, seized by the impulse to ride solo until he can fix what's broken. Or they may genuinely think they have the issue under control. Solve the problem first, they think, then report to the board. Delivering bad news is never easy. In the earlier chapters, we shared that mistakes and even major blow-ups are common. Communicate early and communicate often, says Krista Ensley, recounting the hardest, most stressful time in her entire career. It was September of her first year as CEO of the nonprofit financial management software firm, Abila. She'd sat down to review her third quarter P&L statement, and she nearly had a heart attack. They were going to miss their bottom line at the end of the year by $800,000. She was blindsided by what was a dramatic failure. In hindsight, the problem was obvious. She didn't have the right support around her. She had never hired a CFO. Her VP of finance was inexperienced and, like Krista, had never worked with a board before. Having a new relationship with the board, I didn't know how or when to communicate things, she says. She was also investing energy explaining in gory 150-slide detail the operations and activities of the business. Meanwhile, the financial investors who comprised the full board just wanted to understand what was driving value and by how much. It was a miserable time, she recalls. They honestly had every right to get rid of me. She walked into the next board meeting in Austin, Texas, unsure whether she'd have a job by the time it was over. She shared the P&L, and though she was frustrated, she owned the results. But then she asked the board to look forward with her. The shortfall had not shaken her conviction that their strategy was strong. I assured them. I showed them plans, she said. I knew that we were doing the right thing for the future growth of the business. And deep down, she believed she had the experience needed to run the business. In that meeting, Krista did everything right. She didn't show up and lay an open-ended problem at the board's feet. Instead, she accepted fault, transparently laid out the facts, and offered a clear, confident plan to go forward, including strengthening the team around her. The only thing she could have done better was to see trouble early enough to be able to say, "Hey, this is coming," and ask for help. Trouble was she didn't have the experience to know what help to ask for. The board decided to stand behind her. As the months went on, in addition to hiring the support she needed, she added an external board member, a fellow CEO who had a strong sales background, but who also understood operations and could mediate between the two perspectives. The conversation at board meetings went from detailed reporting with a retrospective view to a forward-looking perspective of leading indicators, such as customer churn or potential deals in the pipeline, and how they would drive value. By the time she stepped down as Abilla's CEO in 2017, she had added two product lines, fully integrated three acquisitions, and more than tripled the size of the business. She exited 2016 with double-digit growth for the year. With the right team, the right bets, and me being a better CEO, we've turned the entire business, she says with humility. It's got to be how people climb big mountains. You do it one step at a time, and you look back from the top, and you're like, wow, when did that happen? At the time, bad news seemed like an unsurmountable obstacle, but taking the long view, it was actually a stepping stone paving the path to Krista's success, mostly because she quickly learned from those early experiences to get ahead of bad news. Successful CEOs stand out not for lack of setbacks, but for how they deal with them. Here are the key lessons from the CEOs we have advised and interviewed. Communicate early and often to ensure no surprises. Own the issues and aim for a tone that is balanced and focused on course-correcting the business. Don't be overly apologetic or defensive. Don't be defensive. Clear and succinct root cause analysis shows you own the issue. Excessive explanations that sound like excuses and deflect responsibility will only put you deeper in the hole and erode trust and credibility. Apologize if an apology is warranted, and then move on. Don't let your energy wane or your tone become obsequious. Discuss forward-looking, early warning operating metrics, not just the rear-view prior month revenue and profits. By the time you miss P&L targets, it is too late to adjust course. Come with a plan that identifies what is happening, the ultimate impact to the business, the root cause, and the roadmap to address it. If the plan is not yet clear, discuss what you need to know or what help you require to get there. An occasional, "I don't know, we'll look into it and get back to you," builds a lot more trust and credibility than trying to wing it. Make it count. Even the best CEOs at times lament the time and energy it takes to build an effective partnership with the board. How you work with your board will to a large degree determine whether they are the strong arms that support you or the ones that push you out. When done well, the payoff for the business and for you as the CEO is well worth the investment. We asked Art Collins to name a CEO who stands out for building a productive partnership with a board. Art has worked with over a dozen boards and numerous CEOs during a career that included the chairman and CEO roles at Medtronic and director positions at a wide range of nonprofit and for-profit boards, such as Boeing, U.S. Bancorp, Alcoa, and Cargill. He instantly named Richard Davis, former chairman and CEO of Minneapolis-based U.S. Bancorp, as a gold standard. Richard grew up as a latchkey kid in Los Angeles and rose from a bank teller to CEO. He transformed U.S. Bancorp from a patchwork of regional banks into the fifth largest commercial bank in the United States. During his more than 20 years on the U.S. Bancorp board, Art worked closely with Richard, serving as chair of the governance, finance, and compensation committees and as lead director at different points during Richard's CEO tenure. Among the world-class CEOs Art has observed, Richard stands out as a phenomenal communicator who engaged deeply with the board to gain alignment on priorities, shared his views and concerns, and continually sought candid board feedback, which he then put into action. Once he became CEO, Richard immediately reached out to each board member to obtain views on what was going well and what needed to change. Art reflects, Richard's communication was always transparent, proactive, timely, and complete. He candidly shared unvarnished facts as best he knew them. If he had a recommendation on an issue, we heard it early. If he wasn't yet clear on the course of action, he always laid out his plan to figure out the solution and then told us when we should expect to hear back from him. Very importantly, we never felt that Richard was trying to sell us a bill of goods or spinning facts to support his point of view. As a result, the board trusted Richard. This trust and alignment with the board made all the difference during the financial crisis of 2008. Richard was barely into his second year as CEO when the country spiraled into the Great Recession, with banks being hit especially hard. While many corporate boards were playing defense, focused on risk mitigation, Richard advocated that U.S. Bancorp continue to invest in infrastructure and customer support in order to position the company for growth. Art recalls that trying time for the bank. The global financial system was in peril. Most of our competitors were retrenching. While we were in much better shape than others in the industry, we still were under tremendous pressure to cut costs. However, Richard saw opportunity and wanted to invest to better serve customers and capture share from competitors. We debated Richard's proposal at the board, recognizing that if the increased expense profile didn't sufficiently result in revenue growth, our profits and stock price would suffer. It was an especially big bet at the time because we didn't know how long it would take before the economy would begin to recover. Richard was completely candid with the board about opportunities and risks during this time of unbelievable pressure. The board ultimately supported his investment program in large part because he was honest and we trusted his judgment. The growth strategy implemented during the financial crisis was a turning point for U.S. Bancorp, setting the corporation on a path to grow into one of the largest and most profitable banks in the country, with 58,000 employees and $21 billion in revenue. The financial company, The Motley Fool, reported recently, as hundreds of banks failed during and after the crisis, and many more were forced to sell out at a discount or to egregiously dilute shareholders by issuing capital at the nadir of the crisis, U.S. Bancorp never once recorded a quarterly net loss. Having successfully passed the CEO baton to Andy Cecere, Richard is now contemplating the next chapter in his professional life. He reflected on how the U.S. Bancorp board helped him to mature and succeed as a CEO. Having accomplished leaders like Art and others provide an outside perspective, constructively challenge me, and push my thinking has definitely made me a more effective leader and a better CEO. When I stepped into the CEO position, Art told me that I should always view the board as a valuable resource rather than a threat. Well, I took his advice to heart, and there's no doubt in my mind that the board's collective knowledge and counsel allowed me to make better decisions that in turn benefited our employees, customers, and shareholders. Armed with the insights in this chapter, you have greater odds than most first-time CEOs of turning your relationship with the board from a source of anxiety to a competitive edge for your business and a source of growth and support for you. Key takeaways. 1. Take an active role in building a highly effective board, starting early in your CEO tenure. 2. Get up close and personal with each board member. Understand individual needs, agendas, and interests. Gauge group interactions and power dynamics on the board. 3. Engage board members actively to support the business and align with them on clear roles and rules of engagement. 4. Avoid surprises. Epilogue. From Ordinary to Extraordinary. There is no passion to be found playing small. Nelson Mandela. We are often asked to name the perfect CEO. Having personally advised or assessed over 300, we've learned that the only perfect CEOs we know are the ones we don't know well. Successful CEOs come from all backgrounds. Many of the CEOs regarded as extraordinary today had very ordinary beginnings. Every single one of them lived through messy struggles and devastating defeats, much like those you may have already experienced in your own career. In this book, we have introduced you to many CEOs to illustrate and enhance the insights from 10 years of research based on the track records of over 17,000 leaders. We hope that you see what we see. Amid the drama of their stories, victories, and stumbles, the lessons of CEOs serve everyone. Whether you aspire to lead an organization or simply to advance in your career and contribute, this book is your opportunity to learn directly from the wisdom and experience of the most successful people in business. As we complete this journey together, we find ourselves coming back to this question of the perfect CEO. While a perfect CEO doesn't exist, there is a particular type of leader that earns our highest regard. These are what we call high-purpose, high-performance leaders. In addition to mastering the four CEO genome behaviors, these leaders create extraordinary value for shareholders as an outcome of two distinguishing actions. They lead with clarity of purpose, and they create a culture grounded in strong values. We've been fortunate to encounter several high-purpose, high-performance leaders. Raj Gupta, whom you met in Chapter 10, is one of them. Raj was raised in India as one of six children of a civil engineer father and a homemaker mother. Who could know that he would one day helm a Fortune 500 company, much less that he would lead Roman Haas to become the second best performing Fortune 500 stock during his decade-long tenure, a mark of reliable delivery that most could only dream of. Raj transformed Roman Haas from a mid-sized specialty chemical company into an industry leader. At the very outset, he acted decisively, completing three acquisitions in a single quarter. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 27% of its value between 1999 and 2009. Over that same period, under Raj's leadership, Roman Haas's stock shot up 117%. Raj produced these victories while facing many of the exact same hazards that have torpedoed many CEOs. Since successfully selling Roman Haas to Dow, Raj has dedicated himself to service. In addition to his charitable activities, he has supported 24 CEOs as an advisor and has served as a director on 15 boards, including Vanguard, HP, Delphi Automotive, and others. When asked to reflect on his proudest achievements, Raj happily agreed to get on a Skype call with us at 7 a.m. "I still wake up at 4 a.m. every day," he says. "Back at Roman Haas, mornings were my most productive time. Old habits die hard." When we spoke, the question of legacy was fresh on Raj's mind. He had just helped his younger daughter, Vinita Gupta, CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, host a charity event. Many of Raj's former colleagues flew to Philadelphia from all over the country to support him, his daughter, and a mission they all believed in. "I firmly believe that this country stands on two fundamental principles, rule of law and equal opportunity for all," says Raj. "As an immigrant, I have been a direct beneficiary of those principles. It's my duty and the duty of every leader to ensure those values remain strong. These are the same values that enabled me to rise to the top, the same values I embedded into the Roman Haas culture as CEO." You can immediately see those values reflected in the team Raj built, with women, Latinos, African Americans, Asians, and Europeans all strongly represented. It was one of the most diverse leadership teams among Fortune 500 companies at the time. In years since, 13 of Raj's direct reports have become CEOs of companies all over the world, a powerful legacy itself. "It didn't matter where you came from," says Raj. "As long as you delivered, there were no limitations to how far you could go at Roman Haas. That's how we exceeded all expectations as a business. That's why we've become known as a CEO factory. Long-term shareholder returns are the ultimate metric for a CEO. But returns are an output, not an input. We've focused on building a great team and on doing the right thing for our customers and for our 23,000 employees worldwide, whose families counted on Roman Haas for their livelihood." For Raj, this mission was and is personal. We all know the CEO role brings power, perks, rewards, and accolades. And yet, Raj says the only thing he misses about the job is the people. Raj knew close to 1,000 employees around the world by their first names. "My favorite part of being a CEO was making a difference in the life of individuals, encouraging them, helping them realize their potential beyond what they thought was possible. That's what I've done post-retirement with my board work, my book, and advising, teaching, and mentoring," he says. Raj's story is extraordinary, but not exceptional. High-purpose, high-performance leaders get up in the morning to achieve better outcomes for others. CEOs and other leaders can have a powerful impact on hundreds, thousands, and sometimes millions of lives. In closing, we hope that you help us achieve our purpose in writing this book. Each of us is a mother of two young children. Like any parent anywhere in the world, our biggest hope is that our children grow up in a safe, fair, and prosperous world where they can realize their own potential. Leaders have a disproportionate power to shape this world. Leaders helped put a man on the moon. Leaders helped bring down the Berlin Wall. Leaders unlocked the secrets of strep bacteria to create possible cures for genetic disorders. But leaders can also build walls, stymie progress, and marginalize people. We want to help the good leaders win. With this book, we are eager to encourage and help you achieve your full potential, no matter your starting point or the ultimate destination, so that you can be the leader who makes the world a better place. Stare down your doubts and flaws, and use the lessons in this book to overcome them. We want you to see what we, at the close of this adventure together with you, believe is a demonstrable fact. You too are a CEO. At least, you could be. And remember to pass on to others the advice and support that helped you succeed. This is Bernadette Dunn. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The CEO Next Door, What It Takes to Get to the Top and Succeed, by Elena L. Botelho and Kim R. Powell, with Tal Raz. This program was directed by Adam Stovall, executive producer Aaron Blank. Text copyright 2018 by G.H. Smart & Company, Incorporated. Production copyright 2018 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.